All right, everybody, here we go again for yet another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert the Tech Doctor, and I'm thinking way out there in California somewhere, hopefully, is Allison Hartley. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning. Yes, clinging desperately to an LTE, Verizon LTE connection because my Wi-Fi has decided to go kaput on me. It is I, Allison Hartley.
The good news is that given that this is wireless, you did not have to climb a telephone pole, right?
I did not. You know, this early in the morning, my coordination's a little off, so I'm glad I didn't have to do that.
All right. So you're on the ground, but on your LTE connection, and we hope it'll hold up during this podcast.
Shaky ground, but on the ground. So all right. Here's hoping.
Shaky, but solid at the moment. That's the way we like it. Well, this is an exciting podcast for me because we have someone with us today who really, I would say, is a pioneer in this area of access technology. He does extensive work on his website called Mac for the Blind and provides a lot of services for people who are making use of Apple technology. We're going to learn all about that. His name is John Panarese. And John, welcome to the podcast. Please take a moment or two and tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much for asking me to come on board. Basically, at this point, what I really do is I have two jobs. Mac for the Blind is my company, I guess you'd call it, in which I do Mac training and iOS training. Is my main focus is basically Apple products, iPod, iPhone, anything that's Apple related. But I do some other training on the side as well. But as of August of last year, I also was contracted to do work directly with Apple. So I've actually been a quality assurance analyst for what they call US Interactive, which is Apple.com. So it's been an interesting pair of hats to be wearing, but it pays the bills and feeds me.
Okay, well, I want to talk more about Mac for the Blind, but you threw me a curveball with this new one there. Tell me a little bit about what does one do with this job that you do for Apple?
Basically, it's reviewing the Apple.com product pages for accessibility with either VoiceOver and, you know, Yosemite, Mavericks, or using iOS 8, and just reporting any anomalies or, you know, issues with how readable or how navigable the different websites are. And, you know, there's a whole formal bug reporting system and meetings with developers and speaking to other quality assurance people on my team. So it's a, you know, everything is done mostly through remote teleconferencing, though I have to fly out to Apple 3-4 times a year to actually meet with, you know, my bosses and my team and so forth.
Wow.
So if anyone has any further doubts about Apple's commitment to accessibility, so like that's a pretty good statement in the right direction, huh?
Yeah.
I've been saying that, trying to say that as delicately as possible on some of the email lists, these people who are doubting Apple's commitment to accessibility. And I've seen, you know, internally stuff that I obviously can't speak about, but people are so far off the mark when they start saying that, well, Apple's, you know, losing their shine and they don't care anymore and they just did it for legal purposes. It's the furthest thing from the truth.
Yeah, and not only is it far from the truth, but if you listen to what Apple itself says, i.e. Tim Cook and others, the commitment to accessibility is not just something that's a corporate line or something that they say to try to make themselves look good. There seems to me there's some real passion behind that commitment.
And I
really would like for people to hear us saying that, even if you know we've said it before. But I think it's really time for those of us who understand a bit about what's going on to speak out in favor of what's happening, honestly.
And I try on the different email lists, but you know, it's an interesting situation because I can only say so much. You know, obviously you sign NDAs and there's things that I've met with people and I know what's kind of going on and I can't really say. I try to walk a line trying to give some information if I can, because like, for example, the iOS 8 debacle, I kind of know what happened and why it happened, and I've tried to say it without coming right out and saying it because I was told some things. I wasn't said – let me put it this way. They didn't say to me, don't say this publicly, but I'm just assuming that the things that I know, I'm not really allowed to come right out and say. But, you know, it really came down to a hardware-software problem, you know, where the hardware got delayed. It created a problem where the software wasn't vetted and thoroughly tested, and that's really what caused. And, you know, people have to understand, it wasn't just accessibility bugs. There were bugs for the mainstream public, too, in iOS 8. So it wasn't like the blind got screwed, quote-unquote.
Exactly. You know? That's what I keep trying to tell people, especially on Twitter. There are bugs for everybody. We are playing in the mainstream pool in a mainstream environment where accessibility is taken extremely seriously. And yes, there are going to be bugs. There's going to be bugs for us. There's going to be bugs for everybody because it's software and hardware, right, and it happens.
Absolutely.
Well, and also the other thing that I have been thinking a lot about lately is what I believe is actually going on in large part is that the bugs that we're experiencing are because Apple is going through some what I would call growing pains.
Absolutely.
What's really happening is they've gone to this 1 year cycle of releasing a brand new version of both iOS and OS X, and it's hugely demanding on the engineering staff. But the other thing is they've made huge changes, a lot of them under the hood, in both operating systems over the last 2 years. And it, of course, it's going to take a little while for all of it to settle out and for the bugs to get resolved. And and this isn't new either. People think this is getting worse. It's new. But the same process went on with I started back seriously on the Mac with Leopard and Snow Leopard and Lion, right, and Mountain Lion and Mavericks and now Yosemite. And to some extent, every year we go through the same iterative process. It's just the way software is developed.
And people have to understand that and not go on public lists and rants. I remember when Yosemite came out, there was a person who got on one of the lists, and if you read through the essence of this person's complaints, it came down to the fact that they changed the way Spotlight worked. And they went on this whole accessibility, Apple doesn't care, they're screwing us, just because they changed the way this person did things on the Mac. And that's the kind of stuff that doesn't help. You know, it doesn't help us. It makes us look as blind people, you know, let's face it, like whiners and complainers.
Yeah, and it's not limited to just blind people, though. I'm seeing these kinds of things going on podcasts and all mainstream Apple sites, and it's unfortunate because it's not helping.
I think people are just overreacting on an epic level. Yeah,
as I call it, you personalizing an issue that you're having into a global problem.
Yep.
You know, it's like it just because it doesn't work for you, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world for all users. And sometimes you have to take a step back and think about what, you know, you're saying before you go on a public list, because once it's out there, you can't take it back.
Nope.
We love to complain about the airlines and how bad it is when you have to go through security and all that. And it is annoying. It is a nuisance. But guess what? It's pretty remarkable when you realize you're sitting a half a mile up in the sky in a very comfortable chair flying across the air. That's right. A pretty amazing thing. Yeah. Apple is pretty amazing with OS X Yosemite and iOS 8. And the things that we're doing now are things that we weren't doing with these devices even a year or two or three ago. And we need to all step back and realize this doesn't come out of the sky in a magical way. This comes through hard engineering and an iterative process that can't be fully tested and fully baked until it gets into 2 or 3 million people's hands. That's just how it works.
And right. I think that's unfortunate, but that's the reality.
Yeah, it is unfortunate in one sense. But, you know, someone said, and I agree with, I don't remember who said it, but these issues, at least the way that I experience them right now, they're more like paper cuts than they are like serious bugs. Yes, it's annoying when this or that thing is happening and you have to maybe go take an extra step to make it work right again. but it has not kept me from using OS X or iOS for one single day or even one single minute. And that's kind of what we need to realize, I think.
Right. Even when the phone restarts, it restarts, it's back, it's not a showstopper.
No, you know? No, it's not.
I fully enjoyed that several minute expression of passionate feelings about.
I feel better. Yeah.
So, but I don't want to completely lose the focus here on Mac for the Blind, and that's a website that I've known about for a long time, a company that I've known about. But I and I'm sorry it's taken us so long to get you on here to talk about it. But can you just go back and tell us a little bit about what Mac for the Blind is, what it does, what it's all about?
It really was not intentional, and people sometimes don't realize this. I was a vendor for several years, 17, 18 years in adaptive technology. I had technologies for the visually impaired. And in 2010, the business, it just got to a point where I saw the handwriting on the wall as far as the blindness industry was going. And I really wanted to do something else, and I closed the business, and my goal was mainstream. Getting a job as a teacher or IT person, and I put up MacForTheBlind.com more as just sort of something to keep me busy while I was looking for a job, quote unquote. So people have been telling me, "Oh, you're really good with the Mac. You're really good with Apple stuff. Why don't you just put up a website?" And I had a lot of time, so I could gather a lot of resources. And really, the goal, and it still is today, and it's kind of, and in some ways, it is a little frustrating, is I want it to be a community-based website. I want people to contribute. I don't want it to be all about me. But what happened was, as the site was getting developed, a friend of mine said, you should really put a blurb about you train people. You can make some money on the side. And I said, okay, I'll put something up there. So lo and behold, within 2 or 3 months, I started getting contacted by state agencies and private clients asking for Mac or iOS training. And I suddenly found myself contracted with the state of Washington and the state of Oregon. And I was doing this for a living. And it all of a sudden hit me within 6 to 8 months. I don't really need to find a mainstream job. I can actually do this and feed myself and pay my bills. So I sort of expanded that, and I've kind of tried to maintain the initial purpose of MacForTheBlind.com, which is a resource site. So I try to do the best I can. It's kind of tough in the last 6-8 months because of how busy I am, but I haven't forgotten about the site, and I'm doing my best. I have the Yosemite text manual coming. I will be putting it up in the next couple of weeks to add to the documentation section. But really, I'm also interested in other people contributing articles and contributing tips and tricks and stuff like that. So anybody who hears my voice, I'm certainly inviting people to contribute.
Okay, and in addition to the website, there's also the Mac for the Blind mailing list, which I'm on, and it's not not hugely busy,
no,
but
it is. I like it that way.
Yeah, I like it that way too. It's a good place for people to ask reasonable questions and expect to get reasonable answers, and that's what I like about the list.
We have great people on the list. I have a couple of people I could really fall back on because sometimes I feel bad because I get so busy that people will ask questions and I can't get to them. And fortunately, I have a few folks who have really stepped up and done a great job helping me out. It's sort of informally. It's not like I said to anybody, please, if I can't answer, you do it. They just have done it. It's been great because it makes the list run like a well-oiled machine.
So what do you make of this issue where you were surprised to get contacted by states and agencies and all that? Does that mean that there really is a shift and not every state, not every agency is just recommending Windows and JAWS anymore? Have things really changed?
I think it's starting to more seriously within the last couple of years. I think Apple has really started to be recognized as a serious player. I mean, there's still holdouts. There's still this mentality of, it's Windows JAWS, you got to be able to use Microsoft Office. And even, the realization that Microsoft Office is not the big game in town across enterprise anymore. A lot of people are abandoning Microsoft Office because it's becoming too expensive to maintain. So I think you're starting to see certain state agencies, and I've even seen it within the ones that I contract with, that in the beginning it was really iOS training. But in recent, like I'd say within the last 2 years, I'm starting to get more and more Mac clients and people. And it's not even that. I'm running across blind people who are advocating with their state agencies to get Macs and turning down PCs. So, yes, I would say it is definitely shifting.
Are you seeing that in California, Allison, or what's the situation out there?
Yes, iOS is huge in California. And I know that, you know, for my particular caseload, I buy iOS devices for people because they can, in many incidences, replace several other devices that we would have otherwise bought, resulting in a much higher cost for that case. So we're saving money by buying a lot of iOS devices. We're helping people to be productive with mainstream technology. And yeah, I do notice that a lot of times I'm purchasing some Macs as well. A lot of times what's happening for me, because I have a pretty significant senior citizen population, a lot of times some of them are losing their vision later and wanting to still continue using their Macs, and they're so excited when they find out that they still can. It's like, it's so wonderful to see their joy, you know, when they find out, oh my God, I can still use my Mac that I've loved for years and years and years. All this accessibility is still there. And then they go out and they tell their friends, and it's just like this wonderful network of awesomeness.
Yeah, it's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
One of the things, you know, that seems to be changing, which you alluded to a little bit, John, is that I know a couple of years ago, I would really get into some debates with people because there seemed like a very strong feeling out there, you know, that the Mac is great for email and web browsing, but if you want to get real work done, you got to have a Windows machine. And it seems to me like maybe at least that's starting to change a little bit. Just even last year, we saw a couple books come out for the Mac. One of them, Tim Sniffen did, where he really proved in his book that you can do very advanced things with Pages and Numbers and Keynote and VoiceOver that most people weren't even aware of. So it seems like maybe that's starting to change a little bit.
I think there's also just, you know, it's just like in the sighted community. I think there's just a Windows entrenchment with some people. No matter what Apple does, Macs are still going to be toys. You know, Apple's going out of business. I still hear people say this, although and within a year, Apple's going to go out of business. You know, they're the biggest company basically in the world right now, but there's still people who keep saying that. And it's like, when are you going to wake up and realize that Apple is a true player? And, you know, all these alliances like they've made with IBM, you know, it just shows you that it's not just the consumer play market anymore. You know, they really are in it for the long haul, and they want the enterprise share just as much as the consumer market.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And it's unfortunate that time seems to move so slowly when it comes to people changing their opinions. It seems like once an opinion gets out there, it takes a long time for people to make a shift. So it's so funny to me and so ironic to me, though, it hasn't stopped Apple from selling more Macs, more iPhones every single quarter. The lines have not gotten shorter.
No. And I just had, you know, when I started to get into this debate on the visually impaired iPhone list, and I just kind of backed off because people don't get it. And the way Apple as a single company, the market share that they have in the smartphone market and how it's been increasing little by little and how Samsung and other companies are panicking over that. It's like you got to read the stuff that's out there because, you know, unfortunately what happens, and it happened to Microsoft and they were a victim of it to a big degree, is when you get so big, at some point, instead of being sort of the golden boy viewed by the media outlets, all of a sudden you become the enemy and the big bad giant that's got to be slain. So all the negative press tends to be the more emphasized press than the positive stuff. So it's like as soon as the iPhone 6 came out, oh, Bendgate, you know, the iPhone 6 Plus bends, you know, and every single product that seems that Apple releases within the first month, you get these panic people. Oh, this blows up. This happens. That happens. And, you know, it's all FUD. You know, it's when you get right down to it, it's just fear, uncertainty and doubt that mm-hmm. people want. The media, you know, they kind of put out there and let the media take it just to try to dissuade people from, you know, using the Apple products, because I think a lot of companies are scared by the market trends.
It's not just that, though. It's that kind of noise out there attracts people to websites, and a lot of people want to promote their site. And so if they can grab on to a nasty, vicious thing that's going on, someone's iPhone exploded, you know, that's going to bring a lot of business in, and it's no good for anybody, but it certainly is a popular way to go right now, it seems like.
Absolutely. Especially if picking on Apple, it's like I said, it's like years ago with Microsoft, where, you know, Microsoft started getting, you know, the death by a thousand cuts. You know what I mean? I'm kind of afraid that Apple is sort of in the position right now where they really are the target.
Of course, I don't think Apple itself is all that, at this time at least, all that worried about it and is suffering that much from it, honestly.
No, because every single time they come out with a new phone or a new product, everybody says it's going to fail. And I remember when the iPad came out, I had this discussion, a really heated discussion with somebody, how this person, she was telling me that the iPad was going to be a disaster and it was a stupid move by Apple. Steve Jobs' luck was about to run out. And it just, like, as soon as the iPad took off, it's like crickets. Every time I would ask her, well, what do you think about the iPad? She didn't know what to say, you know. And I'm starting to hear this now. You know, every time there's a new version of the iPhone, oh, this one's going to be a flop. Apple can't do anything better with the iPhone. Yet the 6 and the 6 Plus was the biggest iPhone, you know, iPhone combination ever. And now everybody's beating on the Apple Watch before it's even released. You're starting to see people, nobody's going to buy a watch. It's dumb. Wearable products is dumb. And you know, yet Apple's going to sell millions of them.
And harping on a product before it even comes out seems pretty dumb to me.
It's just you're just increasing the popularity and people's interest in it by, you know, blowing it up before it even comes out the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like that movie, The Interview, where North Korea made such a big deal about it. If they hadn't, how big would that movie really been?
Yeah.
You know, no offense to anybody who likes the movie, but let's face it, it would not have gotten the press.
It wasn't that great, yeah.
Right.
It made Sony very happy in a very odd way.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know,
I wish the world didn't work that way.
Yeah, that's it.
But, you know, and these, I really am frustrated by, I heard on a recent podcast some people stating things that are currently rumors as facts, that Apple's going to come out with this new 12-inch MacBook Air, and they were talking about the details and the specs and what they liked and didn't like about it, when this product has not even been announced yet. And I really hate that.
It's ridiculous. You can't talk about something you don't have any proof about. I mean, Apple is very good, and I think they deliberately do it at times. I think they throw stuff out there to the media to sort of create smoke screens for what they're truly intending to do.
Mm-hmm.
And people fall for it every time. And, you know, and it's like I'm always amused to see how many rumors and speculatory articles end up being true when a product, you know, reaches market. You maybe 20% of what is, you know, fancied by people actually proves to be real. When I was out in California my first time, when I first got the contract with Apple, I saw the information on the watch and the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus before it was released to the public. And I was laughing about how, because I was thinking about all the articles that had been written and how wrong people were. You know, it's just Apple does a great job of creating these smoke screens.
Yeah, exactly. And Apple values their secrecy. And of course, they can't be as secretive as they used to be because they're so huge now. Everything gets into the supply chain and all that, and the rumors start.
Yeah.
But still, I have a lot of respect for them hanging on to the information until they really have something to release. And I think that's the way it should be.
Right.
I'm wondering, John, if you wouldn't mind, back up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about how you got from being an AT vendor, access technology vendor, to becoming an Apple person. How did you make that transition, and what have you done along the way to help you really get up to speed with Apple?
Well, it really comes back when I was a vendor back in 2005 when Tiger came out. I've been an Apple fan many years. I have friends and family who've been using Macs, and they used to bust my chops all the time because I was using Windows. And so when Tiger became available and was accessible with VoiceOver, I jumped on it right. I mean, I bought a refurbished iBook the day I heard about Tiger being released. And I kind of got to know some of the people inside Apple Accessibility thanks to my dad. My father used to come with me to a lot of the trade shows. And my father was always like the mayor. He would go out and, well, while I was working the booth, he'd go out and meet people and bring them over to the booth and introduce them to me and create relationships. So he ended up really meeting some of the people who worked with Apple Accessibility back in 2005. And it sort of established a bit of a relationship over the years. And so when I was going to shut down, you know, TVI, it was sort of a natural thing because I kind of saw the way things were going with Apple and the iPhone 3GS and, you know, that it was going to start to make some strides into the blindness, area. And my feeling was that I'm always great at catching waves after they pass. So I wanted to be in on a wave actually before it crested. So I took it was a gamble, you know, it definitely was a gamble. You never know how these things are going to work out. But, you know, I it's weird because if people would have told me maybe 2008, 2009, you're going to be a teacher, you're going to end up training people, I would have said you're crazy because it was more – I would do it as a side gig. I mean, my main thing was sales. I like to play with products. I like to sell them. I like to demonstrate them. I wasn't into the whole training thing, but it just by using this stuff over time constantly and seeing that there was a need to actually, you know, that I could actually teach people how to use these things, it really sort of made me think about the process that I used to learn. And, you know, in the beginning, it was a learning process for myself as being a formal teacher. You know, I kind of was really flying by the seat of my pants as far as trying to teach people how to use a Mac or an iPhone. But I developed a guide, you know, a sort of an outline that I use for both situations. And I've sort of honed it over the years. And, you know, now there's things where I wish I could go back to 2011 and work with a couple of people that I had worked with in the beginning who were the unfortunate guinea pigs that I've gotten the process down so much better now. But, you know, it's just been an interesting way this has all developed, and I would have never expected this 5 years ago to be doing what I'm doing now.
Well, it has to be that way, really, because for all of us, this is brand new technology. And who would have thought, you know, in 2008 that in 2009, so many of us would be using a flat piece of glass touchscreen? I mean,
right.
It's all brand new. And so we're all learning. We're all developing as we go. But for somehow, you were just, sounds like, almost in the right place at the right time. And maybe.
Yeah, for once.
For once. And maybe had enough contacts and enough information that you saw clearly enough what was about to happen that you were ready to put your money where your mouth is, buy a Mac with Tiger, get into the iPhone revolution and be there when people started calling and knocking on your door wanting information. You were there to give it. So, I mean, it seems like that worked out really well for you.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was just really a lot of good advice from people because sometimes you doubt yourself. And people telling you, kind of saying, you should do this, you should do that. And that's really how, for example, the certification stuff came along, because I had no real thoughts about getting certified, you know, in any way with Apple, because they didn't have a VoiceOver certification. So that's really was my only interest. But a couple of people said to me, you should really take the Apple certification exams. You know how, you know the Mac inside and out. And having that on your website and having that as a credential, you know, would separate you above, because, you know, you're starting to see a lot of people, and I mean no offense to no one, to anyone out there, but you're starting to see a lot of people who advertise themselves as trainers and such, and I'm sure they're very good trainers and teachers, but kind of setting yourself apart by having a certification that is recognized by Apple, you know, just seemed like the smart thing to do. And that's really the direction I ended up going, to get those, you know, certifications so I could put that on the website and actually say to state agencies, well, I'm also an Apple certified support professional.
So for those who are listening who don't know anything about Apple certification, can you tell us a little bit about what it is, how it works, what it's all about?
Well, there's all kinds of certifications for Apple products, but the three major ones is the support professional for the software, support professional for the hardware, and server support professionals. Those are the three biggies as far as being recognized as a trainer. You could be iWork certified trainer and all that stuff. But I really wanted to get the certification as a support professional. And theoretically, if you have that certification, you could get a job in an Apple store as a genius person. You could be a tech support Apple Care worker as well. So that was really my interest. Now, the only downside to those three particular exams is that they're only offered by Apple certified training centers. So you can't just go to Prometrics or any place like that, you know, a testing company to take those exams. You actually have to find an Apple certified training center to be able to have that exam administered to you.
You can't take the exams online, it sounds like.
No, you're going to need a reader. It's a multiple choice test. It's 80 questions. As a disabled person, for accessibility wise, you do get extra time. But you're going to need a reader because there's about 10 or 12 screenshots that have to be described, and you have to answer questions based on the descriptions of those screenshots. So you want to get a training center, and you want to get a guy or a gal who is really good with the Mac and knows how to describe the screens to you. I was fortunate. The exams that I took, I used the same place in the city, in New York City. A gentleman by the name of William Kehoe, who has done a great job, working with me as far as reading the exams. We were sort of on the same page, and it really worked out well for me. I didn't have any sort of awkward situation as far as when he went through the test exams.
So this reader is something that you need to provide on your own. It's not something that's available at the training center.
Well, if the training center will give it I was fortunate. The guy, Bill, is really the guy who ran the training center. So he, I was kind of reaching out to different training centers, and they didn't have any on Long Island. So I had to go into the city as far as reaching out. And I got, fortunately, through one of my contacts in Apple Accessibility, they gave me, the numbers of some places in New York City. So I happened to get in touch with this guy and asked him, I told him my situation. I wanted to take the certification exam. And he said, no problem. I'll read it to you. He goes, well, just put aside. He goes, we'll just schedule it ahead of time. And I'll it'll just be one-on-one, and I'll read you the exam. And that's how it's kind of worked. The both times I've gone in there, he's been kind enough to sit down and read them to me. So, the whole thing with this situation is you have to advocate for yourself. You really have to go out and contact these places and be perfectly clear that you're a blind person interested in taking the certification, and you need someone qualified who can read you the exam.
It sounds like it's a two or three step process. The first thing that we didn't really talk about is you need to study and prepare for the exam.
Very, very important.
And I understand there is a book done by Peach Pit Press that allows one to study the materials.
Yes. Kevin White and Gordon Davidson have written OS X Essentials. It's the Apple Pro Training Series, OS X Essentials. The Yosemite one should be out shortly. But don't get – and I'm not, again, trying to bash anything, but don't get caught up in these testing kits and Test King and all these other places that come out with these things. You really need just the guide. If you study and read the guide cover to cover, you do the exercises. The one thing that I strongly recommend is create a dummy operating system, have an external hard drive with a partition, however you want to do it. And follow the exercises. Do the exercises at the end of each of the 30 lessons, and have the questions, answer the questions at the end of the exam. Make sure you're very familiar, but take a lot of notes. The other app that I can recommend is there's a iOS app called Revise IT, REVISE IT, and that has sample questions for the OS X Essential exams. And the questions are very, you know, they're very, the ones that I've seen on the app have shown up on my exam. So you will see actual test questions that will show up. And if you use those two resources together, prepare. I mean, people think I joke about this. It took me 3 or 4 months in both cases to prepare for those exams. I didn't just, you know, spend 2 weeks or a month. I mean, I really went the distance. I read the guide from cover to cover. I went back and I reread chapters that I was weak on, and I really took my time, and I just decided I knew when I would be ready. And I had somebody go over for the last exam. You know, they have the trial or the test, I guess you call it, the simulated exams on the Revise-It application. So I had a friend of mine read me that exam 3 or 4 times, and I went through the exam, and I was getting 100s and 98s, and I said, you know what, I think I could do it now. So I was fortunate and blessed that in both instances I got 92.5s. Now, if you score over a 90, not only do you get, are you considered to be a support professional, a certified support professional, but you also get added to the Apple Certified Trainer roster as well, a log or whatever you want to do call it. So, you know, that kind of benefited me in both ways, so that I can actually teach the Mac 101 course to people, which I've had about 6 or 7 clients now that I've worked with that I've taught the guide cover to cover. In fact, I have 3 current people, 2 state clients and 1 private client that I'm going through teaching them the certification, to work towards getting their certification.
There is something called the Apple Consultancy Network, the ACN. I guess right. That's what you're talking about, that you get added to.
Right.
And there's a really great podcast by 3 ACN people called Command Control Power that I listen to, and they describe a lot of what they do as ACN professionals. And of course, a lot of it is not stuff that I would want to do. Wouldn't want to necessarily go out and work on people's hardware and that kind of thing. But it really gives you a good flavor, a good perspective of not only what's possible, but also how these guys think through some of these issues and some of these problems. So for anyone who's serious about it, that's a good podcast to listen to.
It's great.
And the point is, if you're blind, you can do it. You know, it's if I could pass the exam and go through the process, anybody can do it. So if you really have that kind of ambition and interest in getting yourself certified, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's a very difficult exam. I took the certified social worker exam years ago, and I thought that was the most difficult exam I ever took in my life. The Apple certifications made that exam look like a walk in the park, to be honest with you. It was it's 2 very difficult exams. I know, you know, I was told by Bill, you know, people fail that exam 2 and 3 times before they pass it. And the fact that I passed it on both shots the first time through, I was like, wow, I still can't believe I did it in the first, you know, shot.
But you did your homework and you took the time to prepare.
And that's the important thing. You really have to do that.
And from everything that I've heard, if you're not really motivated, really passionate about wanting to do this, don't bother, because
don't waste your time and your money.
You have to put the effort into it and really want it.
That's absolutely, and that's what I wanted to do. And you know, and it was tough. And I skipped the Mavericks one because it's, you know, doing a yearly preparation for this thing, it takes a lot out of you. And when I read the Mavericks guide through and through, and I took all my notes, and I acted as though I was going to take the exam, but I just mentally knew that I could not put myself through that another year. And then, you know, when I got the contract job with Apple, it kind of has really taken my free time that I have to study away from me. So that was another sort of deciding factor as well.
So the way it works, I gather, is each year, each time there's a new operating system, there's a new exam.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, because they do change things, and so one would need to be certified in the current one. I believe from what I've seen, the Peach Pit book for Yosemite was supposed to be available starting on January 15th. So
I have not seen any emails about it, though. Usually they contact you to let contact us. I bought the book twice from them already.
So maybe
I haven't seen anything.
maybe it's behind a little bit, or you know, maybe it hasn't quite made it out yet. What format are the books in?
They come in the EPUB format.
That's what I thought.
And you could also get it through the iBook store, which is also the EPUB format. iText express to actually convert that to RTF, because at the time, you know, this was before Yosemite came out, where the iBooks application was completely accessible. So I wanted to have it in RTF so that I could read it in more easily. But I think obviously this next time around, I'm just going to read it in the iBooks app on the Mac.
Right. Now you can read it. You could read it on an iOS device or on the Mac.
You could do that too. I mean, that's just, to me, it's easier on the Mac, because this way I could sort of go back and forth between the iBooks window and a text edit window to take notes,
and
copy and paste anything I need. It just makes the process easier for me to have it on the Mac.
I don't hear much about these exams, about people taking these exams. Are you aware of other people who are blind who have taken them, or are no?
I know I've heard from blind people that were interested in taking them, but I don't honestly know of any other blind person that has gotten the certification. Not that it probably hasn't happened multiple times. I'm just not aware of it, and I'm sure they're out there. And if they're listening to this podcast, I'm sure they'll let us know.
What do you think about all this, Allison?
Well, I have kind of been toying with the idea of certification for a while. And now that I know about these books from Peach Pit and the Revise IT app, I want to actually take the steps towards doing this. You know, whether I apply it to something in my future career or whatever, I want to have that certification and that distinction, as you say, that distinction that your knowledge is solid, and the credential that sets you apart and makes you a competitive candidate really in any environment. I'd like to have that as well, and I think I'm going to be waiting for that book to come out for sure. Cause it sounds, in the way I see my career trajectory ultimately going, it sounds like it will benefit me.
Well, I think the credentialing part is really important. Anyone can call him or herself an Apple expert and can hang her shingle out and help people, I guess. But to have the credential, it sort of makes it concrete, makes it real. There's no denying it at that point, that if you didn't really know the information, you probably wouldn't have passed the exam.
Well, that's why, like I said in the first place, why I wanted to have it, because I was starting to see a lot of people out there advertising themselves as Apple trainers and blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. You know, it's a free country. You do whatever you want. But I wanted something that set me apart, that people would actually see on the website and go, okay, at least this guy has a certification and is recognized by Apple. You know, so that's why I really did it, and it's benefited me quite a bit. I mean, to be honest with you, having the certification has definitely helped me as far as, being recognized as that when I'm trying to apply to get a contract through state, through a state agency organization.
Sure, of course.
That's wonderful.
I'm guessing that we probably have a number of Tech Doctor listeners who are potentially in a position to maybe be able to benefit from what you have to offer on both the website and you personally as a trainer, consultant, helper. How would people go about exploring more what is available to them at this point?
Well, I have some information on my website. I have a couple of articles that I've written about, as far as my experiences taking the exams and my recommendations and, pieces of advice to people. You're more than welcome to contact me directly by email, John, J-O-H-N, at macfortheblind.com. You could call me 631-724-4479. Ask questions. I'd be happy to, give you any advice. If you're interested in formal training, we could obviously discuss that as well. So, whatever, I'm more than happy to point people in the right direction. I've had a lot of people who've written to me, who've called me and asked me about how should they go about taking the exams. So I never mind, assisting people in any way that I can.
So you'd be willing to talk with someone and offer a little bit of advice. It sounds like I'm assuming at no charge to them.
But no, no charge, no.
If people want to pursue it further and you're going to dive deeper, then you could discuss some sort of formal relationship.
Right. I'm not, I don't try to play the attorney in charge for, you know, every minute that I speak to somebody or every email that that's just not right. You know, I don't mind helping people. That's the whole thing about the Mac community. If you know, you know, when you get involved in the whole Apple community, everybody tries to give each other a hand. You know, so that's the philosophy I really try to, you know, try to establish with myself.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that because there's something very special about the Apple community. Allison and I did a presentation last year at CSUN, and while we happened to be in San Diego, two of the major Apple podcasters, Allison Sheridan and her husband Steve, and Adam Christensen, both took the trouble to come down and have a meal with us and visit with us and talk with us just because we had reached out to them and because of us all being a part of the Apple community. And you just don't see that in, I've never seen it happen in the Windows community or
nothing even close.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's just a different feeling. It really is just being, you know, it's just different. And it's hard to describe it until you get involved in it.
It's that willingness to talk with each other and help each other out a bit is just so important. It's one of those intangible things that you wind up getting should you choose to reach out and participate in it when you make that move to an Apple product. There's so many little things like that that you don't even realize are going to happen for you if you just let it happen.
Yeah.
Right.
It really does make it a very interesting time. And, you know, we struggle sometimes on this podcast about the other options that are out there and about mainstream technology versus specialized technology and all that. But to me, this Apple forward movement with accessibility just seems to continue. And it's getting even more exciting, I think, in 2015. So we have a lot to look forward to.
I think so. I think still the best is yet to come. I just think it's just going to get more and more impressive.
Yeah. And, you know, each year my wife laughs at me because I can't wait to get that, you know, brand new iPhone as soon as I can get it. And she's like, well, you know, why do you always have to have a new one? Well, because there are always changes and always improvements. Yep. And
I always use that as an excuse. Hey, I'm a trainer. I have to have the latest device.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's perhaps another way you can use that certification, right?
Yeah, see that?
That is kind of funny. Well, John, I really want to thank you for taking your time to come on the podcast to talk with us about these things. Have we basically covered the highlights of the kinds of things that you would like Tech Doctor listeners to know about you and Mac for the Blind and all that?
I believe so. I mean, I appreciate and I'm honored to be on the podcast. And I'm not one who likes to toot my own horn. So sometimes people have to pry information out of me. I'm not one of those people that really likes – I'm not comfortable spending a lot of time talking about myself. I'd rather talk about the Apple products.
Sure. More comfortable doing that. And yet, you know, I really don't want to see Mac for the Blind fly under the radar because you've got so much to offer.
Thank you.
So it's nice to take a few moments and highlight it a little bit, pull it out a little bit, because we're seeing some other training options come on the scene for the Mac and iOS and all that, and I'm glad to see people out there doing things, and it's great. But it's kind of like it's really important to us on this podcast to highlight those that really have something that's just a cut above what you can get anywhere. And
yes,
I think Mac for the Blind is one of those sites, and you're one of those people.
That.
You know, that really does that really puts your money where your mouth is. You don't just talk about certification. You go and get certified, and then you have something to offer that people can really rely on and count on. And so it's a really great thing that you're doing, I think.
Thanks. Thank you. It's just every day you just try my best, you know. That's all you can do.
That's all any of us can do. And we're so glad that you've taken some time to spend with us this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah,
anytime, you know, anytime you want me back, just ask.
Okay, great.
We will definitely have you back because, as you say, the best is yet to come in terms of where we're moving with Apple.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be an exciting year. And as far as I can tell, the foreseeable future, there's going to be new things. I won't even try to drag us down the road since we haven't seen it yet of discussing the Apple Watch. But I think that's going to be pretty cool when it comes
out. We're all going to get one. Let's face it. You know?
Yes. You got it. As soon as it's pre-ordered, I'm on that.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun to work with and podcast about and talk about. All right, you all, I certainly appreciate you guys out there tuning in and listening to this podcast. Thank you so much. Well, Allison, I guess that will take care of all I have to say for this time. If you don't mind, could you tell people how they can get in touch with us here at the Tech Doctor Podcast via the email?
Absolutely. Everyone, please send email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com. We love to hear from our listeners via email, and soon we're hoping to have some other methods of getting a hold of us as well. So stay tuned.
That's right. We have the goal of trying to get to know our listeners more in 2015. We're going to work
absolutely
on that.
That's a great New Year's resolution.
All right. Well, this is Robert the Tech Doctor. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, I will say so long.
And this is Allison Hartley, LTE version, saying bye, everyone.